Ball Spark.
You want good words? Data language.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Calc with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP!
Good Tuesday morning out there, Western and Northwestern Oklahoma. Welcome to Skinny on Sports right here on 98.1 FM, the Sports Animal. Glad to have you along for the next hour. We get into all different kinds of things. Maria Taylor versus Rachel Nichols. Did you see that story over the weekend that broke with ESPN? Little infighting, little cat fighting, infighting. It's funny, nobody on they forced Rachel Nichols into a apology last night. That was just so sad. So sad to watch poor Rachel Nichols succumb to the pressure of needing a paycheck. We know what her real feelings are. It was in that leaked audio with LeBron's buddy. And now to make. From a year ago. But I mean, it all makes sense as to why it was leaked right now. Maria Taylor is,
somebody needs to get paid.
Maria Taylor's trying to get Stephen A. Smith money. She's making about $1 million a year, asking for $8 million a year. There's no way in hell she deserves that kind of money because she's – have you watched the pregame on ESPN?
No.
With her and Jalen and Jay Williams? It's awful.
It's no TNT.
Not even close. I mean, if TNT is and it is – the gold standard of NBA pregame and postgame shows, the Maria Taylor joint on ESPN is so far from that, it's scary.
If Fox was smart, they'd go get Rachel Nichols and Charles Barkley and go after the NBA.
Chuck is seeming like he's about done. He said 2 years.
Done with TNT or done completely?
He says done completely, but we'll find out. But anyway, we'll get into that a little bit. Pretty interesting. The timing, you're right, is pretty skeptical of the timing.
Pretty snaky.
Also, are you excited for the match? Did you even know the match is being played tonight?
This afternoon. It's 4 o'clock our time.
So it's Bryson and A-Rod, Aaron Rodgers, against Tom Brady and Phil.
Right.
It has potential, as these things always do, but you just hope they're not too buttoned up. I mean, think of the needle Phil Mickelson could put into Bryson and never quit turning. Between the Brooks stuff, he just fired his caddy last week. Lots of things there. And, oh, by the way, if he ever hits it past him, look out. NBA Finals start tonight. Giannis is doubtful but progressing. Asked Jared how he would try to stop Phoenix. A lot of talk about how to guard them. Do you try to take away Devin Booker, or did you try to take away Chris Paul? X factors in the series, who wins and how many games. We'll talk about that. We'll touch on some stuff that we missed from yesterday. Quade Cummins had a really nice weekend down in Auburn on the form tour. He is right on the cusp of being in that top five for a Korn Ferry Tour card next year after 2 of the 8 tournaments on that schedule. Good weekend on the recruiting trail for Oklahoma. It was a good week last week for Oklahoma State. Talk about that. A horrible story from Georgia. Some stuff starting to kind of leak out there, but not a lot of details into what happened down in Kennesaw, Georgia with the golf pro. And then back to kind of the recruiting. I watched a show last night, which I'd seen like different. It's not new by any stretch. It was the ESPN 150s.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Remember those with college football?
Yeah, I caught a couple of those over the weekend.
It was a new one that I'd never seen. It was called Evolution, and it talked about how the game changed.
Like rule changes and
rule
stuff?
Changes, yeah, the way the game's played.
That's funny. I saw a snippet of that this weekend.
It was on last night. I'll talk about that a little bit. Because there was a pretty interesting stuff that I didn't necessarily know. Like, do you know who came up with the neutral zone?
No. Like the term or?
Like the rule.
The rule?
Yeah.
No.
Some guy that played for Harvard. His name was Henry something Lewis. He was the first African American to play college football.
Oh, wow.
And then he ended up being a coach at Harvard, and he came up with it.
Last name wasn't neutral?
Nope. It wasn't zone either. Jared Aetha?
What up?
What's going on?
Not a lot. How are you?
I mowed my yard for the second time in 3 days last night.
Yeah, I'm going to have to do it again. I did it on Saturday.
Yeah.
And I could already tell, you know, with me going on vacation next week, I'm going to have to mow that thing before I leave.
Probably twice this week, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking Friday night, but or Friday after work, but I already got plans, so maybe Thursday. Yeah, it's a growing now with all that rain that we got. Now it's growing season again.
Yeah, it's supposed to be kind of warmish, not too terrible hot for
the
first.
Are the mosquitoes eating you alive?
Yes, I've got little bitty spots
Holy
all over
moly.
Me.
Where, my poor kids, man. Oh my goodness, their legs are like chicken pox.
There is no doubt the one negative in being able to sit outside and watch the fireworks the other night was the mosquitoes.
They're bad.
Yeah, I've got spots all over where just itching and scratching. And
My youngest,
no good.
God, she can't figure it out why it's so itchy. And she slept with us last night because big sister was out camping with a friend.
Ooh.
So she was kind of jealous. And I tell you what, you can sleep with mommy and daddy. And she just tossed and turned all night because her legs were itchy.
Right.
She's congested, and she's snoring. And so daddy didn't get a lot of sleep last night either. Poor thing was just miserable. So we're just trying to keep her comfortable. Man, yeah. Those mosquitoes are bad.
That's the one negative about the rain.
Yeah, well, yeah.
At this time of year is that, unfortunately, that's what comes with it.
Yep.
So the deep wood's off. You know, I've seen people, this is a recent development in my mind, trying to keep insects and flies away. You know what the new thing is?
What's that?
Take Irish Spring soap and cut it in half. I've never heard of that. And I've seen like three people do it already this summer.
My wife saw that last night.
Really?
She's looking at that. I think this is what I'm going to do. Explain it again. I didn't get the full.
It's just you get a bar of Irish Spring and you slice it in half. Just set it there.
It's crazy. You know what I think I'm going to do?
What?
Is get a beekeeper's outfit.
Yeah, well.
Because even all the bug spray in the world's not keeping them off me. I mean, I got one last night right on my wrist, and it welted up real bad, like in a hurry.
Yeah.
What is going on? And I usually don't get bit by mosquitoes, but man, they were attacking me last night. Of course, Sunday night, they're getting us, constantly swatting them away.
I killed one in my car this morning.
Yeah, that'll almost make you drive off the road.
Yeah.
That and spiders for me.
Yeah, I've got one right there. See where there on my knuckle.
And I got this constant itchy feeling on different parts of my legs and arms.
And I also think it's a little bit like when you get into the ants, or you think you got into ants, then you feel them on you and you don't, and they're not really there.
Yeah.
I think that there's some part of that too with these mosquitoes. Like, okay, there's a real one, but then I start scratching my leg and I scratch the skin off and it bleeds, and there really wasn't anything there.
Yeah.
But it feels like it. So now, yeah, right now, all of a sudden my legs are starting to itch because we're talking
about
it.
Yeah, I know. My youngest, it was the funniest thing. We were outside. It was Sunday and just messing around, and I saw one embedded in my arm. You know, it was too late. It was already big and fat. And I go, "Hey, James, look at this." And I just smacked that thing, and of course, blood. And she just screamed. Ah! She thought, "Daddy, are you okay? Yeah. Oh my God, Dad,
your arm's falling off.
You're bleeding." So that's a mosquito bite. Don't let the mosquitoes get you. I had to teach her what mosquitoes do. They suck your blood, and it's gross. Yeah, bad stuff. Yeah.
Hmm.
Anyways, yeah, We were down one kid last night, and I told my wife, I'm glad we had two kids because it is boring with one kid. They're not yelling at each other. There's no yelling in the house. There's no laughing, no playing, no arguing. It's funny how you miss that stuff when one kid's gone. You only have the other kid just kind of, well, "Daddy, can I watch TV?" "Yeah, go for it." Poor thing.
Boy, howdy. I'm going to disagree with that. Having one is plenty. For me, anyway. It's hard to keep up with that one.
Oh.
And then a couple weeks ago when the two cousins came, when there was three in the house.
Oh, I bet that was a loud house.
Oh, I was wore out.
Loud house, yeah.
It's not really. When did they? Oh, my. Everybody. Yeah.
Do they sleep?
Do they?
Yeah.
A lot of things going on here.
Yeah.
I used to. The story down in Georgia, pretty awful story.
That's horrible.
Just to be quite honest. So it was Saturday. And the guy's name is Eugene Siller. Gene Siller. He was the club pro at Pine Tree Country Club in Kennesaw, Georgia. It's right around Kennesaw State, the campus there. And there was a pickup that was apparently kind of driving onto the course out by the 10th hole. And he went to check on it and basically tell the people to quit driving on the golf course, and was shot and killed, along with two other people. Apparently, one of them was the owner of the pickup. So it seems fairly certain that maybe they were either being held hostage or somebody that was with them just snapped and started shooting everybody. They're still not 100% sure who it was. They're trying to find the suspect or figure out a suspect. But, man, you want to talk about just an awful story. A guy goes out to, you know, protect his golf course, and then ends up with a gunshot wound and to the head and dies. It's just a brutal, brutal story from Georgia over the weekend.
That's crazy. And, you know, a lot of details other than what you gave, you know, first thinking what, you know, was there a dispute there? Was it, you know, I first saw the headline, I thought, man, did somebody carrying a gun in their golf bag, you know, I didn't know what.
Yeah, like get mad at the bet,
yeah,
or something.
Yeah, yeah, but that is just a horrible story, and I can't imagine, you know, this time of year, it's holiday season, and you know what the family is going through. But I mean, what? I don't know. Just what kind of people are out there that thinks, you know, just to tell somebody to stop driving on the golf course, and, oh, I'm just going to get my gun out and shoot you. It's crazy.
Yeah, it really is. It, you know,
because that's the last place you think about. You're on the golf course. You don't think of that kind of violence. You know, and I've played on golf courses where I've had to drive through some rough neighborhoods and areas to get to it. But then when you get there, you feel safe, right? You feel safe. You feel secure. It's a, you know, it's like this is a haven. This is a, for lack of a better term, a protected place. Like I feel safe on a golf course, right? So you kind of let your guard down when you're on a golf course when it comes to like violence like that. Am I making sense? You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely.
It's just a sense of an aura about a golf course. You don't think someone would do that.
But some, no, people, but just, some, you know, just, what though? Think about when we played over at Weatherford.
Yeah, yeah.
In that CASA tournament.
Yeah.
And it wasn't actually on the golf course. If you're familiar with Weatherford's golf course, there was a car that drove onto what used to be kind of behind number two green.
Right.
Now it's nothing back there because they rerouted the golf course because of lengthening the runway there at their airport. But while we were there that morning, a car drove on to that part of the property,
right?
Which what would have normally been right there around number two green back in the day, and you know that's something that I'd never seen, or you know, there's certain times when you know everybody's kind of has that story or knows somebody that has that story of a car at night. Kids messing around,
oh,
and,
yeah,
and driving across the green, and how, yeah, awful that is when it happens, just as far as just the turf.
Right.
But this is on a whole different level. And I've heard of
a
story,
car chase on a golf course that's somewhere.
Yeah, but really has nothing to do with the course itself. You wonder, right, if this is going to have any kind of connection to the golf course, you know, with one of the victims being the registered owner of that pickup that drove out there. I mean, there's no telling. It does seem like Gene Siller, the club pro, probably just happened upon or went to check on a situation that wasn't intended for him.
Wrong place, wrong time,
yeah, doing his job, and unfortunately cost him his life. But this is something, it's the details of this, when they do come out, going to be really interesting to see what, if any, role that, if the golf course just happened to be there, or if it was something a little bit more sinister within that organization or that club itself. But it's just a horrible, sad story, for sure, with, you know, leaving behind a wife and two kids, 6 and 7, young kids. He was only 41 years old. But a weird story and an awful story there over the 4th of July holiday down in Georgia. A little bit more positive news from down in the southeast corner of the United States over the weekend. Weatherford's own Quade Cummins, who played at Oklahoma for, what, 5-year career on the golf course. He is on the Form Tour, and what that is kind of the, you probably call it like double A. So if the Korn Ferry is triple A, the Form Tour is double A.
Okay.
Back in this last year, just completed his college career, he was one spot out of the top 5 on the PGA Tour University rankings, which would have got him a Korn Ferry card for the rest of the year. So he's down on the Form Tour, which he did earn that card by finishing 6th in those rankings, top 5 went. And so now it's an 8-tournament schedule, and the top 5 at the end in the points chase end up with a Korn Ferry Tour card next year. And so far through two tournaments, Quade's been in the top 10 in both, tied for 10th in the first one, and then this last week shot 66-64 on the weekend to move up into a tie for 3rd, 3 shots off the lead. And so with that tied 3rd or tied 10th, tied 3rd, Quade's now 7th on the points list through 2 of the 8 tournaments. Now they kind of take a break for a couple weeks and then get back to kind of go in 2-week segments. 4 different times throughout the summer. So far, so good for Quade Cummins. I know we're efforting. His schedule's kind of all over the place, but I've contacted him about coming on at some point when he kind of catches a breather. But a really good start to the professional career for Weatherford's own Quade Cummins. It's pretty cool.
That is pretty cool. Pretty exciting, and glad that we're able to follow him and you know, see him progress. I think we all kind of had this. I know you especially, after seeing him when he was shorter than you and still hitting the ball probably better than you. And you saw that spark in him. And then, of course, his fantastic college career. And I think we all knew this was the next step, right? Now it's just a matter of how high can he get? How can he take that next step? And that's the fun thing about watching local guys like this, is rooting them on and seeing how far they can go. So what do you think? Do you think he can? I mean,
sky's the limit, man. He coming out of high school, he wasn't one of those guys that played all over the place like a lot of the others do.
Right.
So you weren't sure necessarily. I mean, you seen him play and you knew he's good, but you weren't 100% sure exactly how good he was,
right,
against the best of the best competition. And then throughout his college career, he proved how good he was. Ended up on a Walker Cup team, which is this summer was basically the Ryder Cup of amateur golf. There's only 12 of those guys in the whole country that get to play for their own team,
right,
their own country, and he was one of them. And then finishing 6th, and that, you know, that's just the year-long ranking of those college guys. I mean, and those are the ones that end up going on to compete to make themselves a household name on the PGA Tour. So, I mean, there's no way you can sit here and say, it just doesn't have it. You can't say the other way either.
Right.
But I do know this. At every single level that he's ever played golf at, he's figured out a way to be one of the best ones. And so why not continue to follow it and chase that dream? And so far, you know, he's right there, you know, watching his kind of his scores without, you know, really talking to him and finding out how it went. It seems like each round he just has like one or two bad holes that keep him from winning. I mean, they're not keeping him from getting top 10, but even last week at Auburn, his first round was just 2 under when everybody else, there was, you know, 4, 6, 8, there was even 10 unders on that golf course. So the first round, a little bit slow start, probably cost him a chance to win. But that's just stuff you have to figure out and work through. But he has done a really good job in both tournaments of kind of being on the edge of going the wrong way and maybe not even making a cut, and then turning it back on and being able to finish where he's finished. So, you know, each and every point he can earn is going to matter at the end of the year, you know, and where he's going to be able to play when it comes to next year. And getting that, being able to be fully exempt on that Corn Ferry Tour is very, very important, because at that point, you're one step away. You're one good week away on the Corn Ferry Tour. If you can somehow figure out a way to win one of those, you're almost guaranteed to have a PGA Tour card, the way that those that works.
Yeah.
And then if you can really have success there, then that prepares you, and you're even more confident going to the big league. So, yeah, I wouldn't put anything past him at this point, without a doubt. The guy has proven year after year to get better and better and better and better, and the sky's the limit for him. Man, last week was a pretty interesting week for recruiting in the state of Oklahoma. And I don't know if there's any rhyme or reason for it to happen other than maybe just the 4th of July holiday. And
it's turning into a new kinda national signing day. Isn't it weird that they want to take the 4th? I mean, Caleb Williams did it last year, made a big deal of it. Now a lot of recruits are jumping in saying, this is the day I'm going to make my announcement.
Yeah, it's just the holiday has kind of been a big time in the over the last few years. And I think with the calendar getting scooched up into December for that first signing day, maybe it places a little bit of a premium on getting it done. You know, some guys don't want to have this hanging over their heads for their senior years of high school.
Right.
Others don't mind, but some of them want to get it done, get it out of the way, and then focus on, you know, their team and their last chance to win whatever title there is out there in front of them for their high school team. It kind of started, Wednesday? Was it Wednesday? When the Talon Shetron flip happened.
Right. Wednesday or Thursday.
Yeah, it was right here, the 30th is when he committed to Oklahoma State. So that would have been what, Wednesday? Yeah.
Yes.
Wednesday. Anyhow, Edmond, Oklahoma, Edmond Santa Fe High School. He's rated number 17 overall in the country on ESPN's top 300. Had been committed to Oklahoma for a while. And then basically what happened was his brother, which is a pretty interesting story if you read that column in the Oklahoman. Those guys are both adopted, but they're both the same age, just a few months apart. And so, Todd,
they're not blood brothers.
No,
they're adopted.
That's
brothers.
Right.
Gotcha. Okay.
Adopted brothers. And his brother Todd is like 6'4", 220. Nobody would. He didn't have a lot of offers from the big time schools that Talon did. Well,
wide receiver as well.
It's a tight end.
Tight end. Okay.
Tight end. And so Mike Gundy, which to me is genius, thinking in his mind, well, I can get this guy if I offer this guy, went ahead and pulled the trigger.
Right.
And when he did, he got them both. And, you know, it's pretty interesting because I haven't necessarily seen a ton of sour grapes from OU fans, which I figured I would. And the truth of it is, With the way that those programs are, Oklahoma doesn't have to make that move. They don't have to offer a scholarship to the brother, and the whole time knowing that the risk is they lose Talon Shetron. But with the if there's one position, and you look at these rankings, Oklahoma in the last week and a half lost the 17th and the 12th overall player on ESPN's top 300 as wide receiver commits, Jordan Hudson from Garland, Texas, who committed to SMU over the weekend, and then Talon Shetron.
I'm sure there's some family connection there. I was kind of looking into that. Like, why SMU? I mean, have they, now that the NIL is out, have they picked up their old 80s ways where they can?
I think they have a legend in high school football coaching there. Samples, Rashad Samples.
Okay.
Who played for his dad, and now he's on the staff at SMU.
Yeah, somebody told me, yeah, that there's a connection there like that.
Yeah, and so, you know, that's another thing. And listen, that NIL will
– oh, that, it's going to shift.
It can make a little bit of a difference for guys that maybe wanted to stay home.
Yeah.
You know, maybe they can get an extra
$2,000.
You got
SMU right there in the Dallas Metroplex. Mm-hmm. Maybe more opportunities to make a little coin.
So let me ask you this. Do you have a problem – with the way that the OSU staff went about recruiting Talon Shetron?
No, that's been a practice that's been happening for years, right? We've heard that. Let's face it, the less talented brother to get the more talented guy. Maybe you can get the more talented guy to come with. It's been happening for years. I don't have a problem with it. I don't have an issue with it. I don't have an issue with the young man flipping to stay with his brother. I mean, family, man. I totally get that. I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah, and you know what? Sometimes
I would maybe have more of a problem if he went to Texas. Hey, staying in state, you know, keep the kids in state. I'm good with that. But especially, all kidding aside, you know, staying with his brother, that's a personal decision he made, and I have zero problem with that.
Well, and you mentioned in state because that's something that has been a thing over the last few years for Oklahoma is, you know, in a state that doesn't produce just a ton of talent, ton of top flight talent, there's a clear line of demarcation between the success on the field between Oklahoma and everybody else in the Big 12. But OU's had a real problem keeping the top flight guys in state. Think back to Josh Proctor, who was from Owosso. He went to Ohio State. Dax Hill, Booker T. Washington, went to Michigan. Kendall, what was his name for Beggs?
Yeah.
That committed to A&M, actually signed with A&M, then got out of it. Now he's at Oklahoma State. Kendall Daniels?
Daniels, yes.
Yeah. And then now you look at this year, there's guys that OU's wasn't being able to get. And then all of a sudden, on July the 4th, bam, there they are with, what, three? Jacob Sexton from Deer Creek. You had Robert Spears Jennings from Broken Arrow, which has been a place that OU has not been able to get guys at all, but were able to. So I guess it's just those two. And then Jaden Rowe, the guy from Union that committed a while back. All but one were defense with two defensive backs, and then Derek Moore, which is number 25 on this list we're looking at on ESPN's top 300. Defensive end for Baltimore, Maryland.
Which I'm very excited about.
You know, we had the text that OU's kind of ramping it up. Defensively, I don't think there's any doubt that Oklahoma's better than they were 2 or 3 years ago, and a big part of that is they're just simply getting better players. But does it concern you the struggle that Oklahoma's having keeping those top flight Oklahoma guys in state at OU?
If it hurt their recruiting ranking, which right now 24/7 has their 2022 class at 6 after this weekend, I mean, if it was a problem, and it is if we're going to call it a problem, I guess it is because you're right, they're missing out on these guys, but it's like, well, we can't get those guys, but we can go to Maryland and get this guy. I mean, that's where they got Caleb Williams. That's where they got Derek Moore. We can go down to Texas and get some wide receivers. We can go over to California. They've kind of abandoned California lately. But my point is, if it was going to hurt their recruiting ranking, then what does it matter? I mean, you know, there's some guys, it's just the way kids think. Like, I want to get out of state. I've lived here all my life. I want to move on and go on and break free. And some, fine example, Ethan Downs. He wanted to stay, you know, big OU fan, stayed right here in state, and OU went and got him. So to answer your question, no, it doesn't bother me as if it would bother me if it was hurting recruiting.
Well, here's my thing. How is it not bothering you when the guys that are leaving are exactly the position that is hurting you the most on defense?
It's true.
You know, you think about if you have Josh Proctor as a safety the last few years, how much does that change? In pairing with Dax Hill, which were national recruits. And I think that's the part that stings. And then Kendall Daniels is another guy that you're looking around. Gentry Williams, Booker T this year. You know, he's a 4 or 5 star, depending on what service you look at.
Yeah.
Track athlete, corner. And I think maybe that's the part that stings the most, if you're an OU fan, is the guys that you're missing on, the top flight guys, are all at positions of humongous need on your defense. And they were right here in this state, and you're unable to get it done. And there's a reason for that. It's because, A, you didn't have a plan for some of them. And, B, if you're one of these top-flight guys looking around at what the secondary was, you know, how long has it been? You remember the last first-round pick from the secondary at Oklahoma?
Secondary? No. Is it first? No, I don't.
Andre Wolfolk.
Okay, yeah.
Been a while.
That's actually who I was going with.
Yeah, it's been a while.
I thought he was early second round.
Yeah, he was a first rounder to Tennessee. So, I mean, that's how long it's been. Now, you know, right after that, obviously Derek Strait was a fantastic college player, winning all the awards. But it's just been a while since Oklahoma's been able to produce those guys, and you know, you could see it. Now there's a difference out there right now. I think when you see like Woody Washington, he looks different than the guys of the past. Just the way he's built, the way he plays, and I think that's been a big part of what Grinch is trying to do, is get different sized guys back there than what Oklahoma's had in the past. Oklahoma State's the same way though. They haven't been able to keep these guys. I mean, Dax Hill's brother played there at the same time that Dax Hill was coming. And he went to Michigan and didn't go to Oklahoma State. You know, so there's, you know, I think both schools know, you want to keep these best guys in state as well as you can, and then obviously supplement with Texas, and that's what Oklahoma State's plan is, and they do a really good job in Texas, a really good job around the Houston area, it feels like, with their recruiting. OU can go a little bit more national, and we've seen that with the, you know, I don't know how much it's just Lincoln Riley connection to the East Coast, but it feels like some of those East Coast guys have really started to kind of filter in here a little bit. But, you know, the backbone of these classes is always going to be Oklahoma and Texas. Mm-hmm. You know, it feels like they both struggled just a little bit keeping those guys here.
You're talking the in-state guys.
Yeah, the in-state guys.
I wonder, here's a theory. They live here. They hear talk radio, local news, and all they hear is how down, at least the last, excluding last year, maybe the year before, but how down OU's defense has been. That's the only thing that can't get them over the hump. That can't get them over the, you know, that's the only thing. Da, da, da. And we just harp on it over and over and over again. That's all they hear. And they want to get away from that. Like, I don't want to go play for a bad defense. I want to go to play for a good defense.
Yeah, it's interesting because you would.
But you'd think they'd accept the challenge, go, I can fix the defense.
And maybe the world getting a little bit bigger. There's, you know, every game is on. Almost every single college football game that's played each weekend is on TV somewhere.
Right.
And so the advantage of some of these schools as blue bloods from a TV standpoint maybe not be there as much as it used to be. And so they're exposed to different schools and different teams, and then you go visit them and you like them, and boom, there you go. And I also think that there's a little bit of a the one complaint I think you hear from guys that don't end up in state is they feel like they got disrespected when they were a sophomore, which that's just them. Like, they weren't offered first by either OU or OSU. And that's on the kid. That's not on the there's nothing you can do about that as a coach if you're not very first. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, why did they wait an extra 2 days? Well, that's just timing. But sometimes a 16-year-old kid gets something in his head and you can't get it out.
Oh, sure.
But after all, having all, said all that, when you look down the list on the rival side, because they'll do the state-by-state rankings, so far three of the top six have committed to either OU or OSU. You've got Shetron and C.J. Brown, running back from Beggs, which is number six, both to Oklahoma State. Sexton, the offensive tackle from Edmond. Deer Creek is number four. And the two guys in between Shetron and Sexton is Chris McClellan, which is a defensive tackle that's blown up over the summer in his recruiting. He's got offers from everywhere. And he's one of those that kind of has that chip on his shoulder. Why didn't you guys offer me to other people? And then Gentry Williams, who is a guy that, you know, many thought has been an Oklahoma lock for a long time. And now, you know, he tore an ACL. He's back. He's a track guy. And apparently really likes USC. So we'll see. But those are the type of guys that can be the difference between, you know, a Big 12 title, a national title, making the playoff, whatever, because of the defensive nature of the guys that are getting out of here. And both schools couldn't look at us with a straight face and say, you know what? We haven't had any defensive issues over the last decade. We've been just fine there, buttoned up completely in the secondary. Defensive tackles, we've had plenty of them. Aren't you looking at the draft? So it's just a little bit of a problem that has to be changed for both schools, I think, if they want to try to reach all the way to their goals. Because as much as as much as I'm the take the best guy, no matter where he's from,
right?
I do think if they're equal, there's a pretty good chance that the guy that's from here cares more about the program, whichever one it is, than a guy that's not. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, that's just nature, human nature of growing up in this state, rooting for one of the two schools. But I think it's important. Gentry Williams and Chris McClellan.
But another part of me is if you're going to get so upset because you weren't offered first, then get better. Well, what if the guy that got offered first just happened to be a better player?
At the time, but then you end up better at the end.
Sure, sure.
That's why it's so impossible to figure. Because these kids are 16, 17, 18 years old. NBA Finals, Game 1 tonight out in Phoenix, 8 o'clock, ABC. Suns and the Bucks. No matter who wins, we're going to have a brand new champion. The Bucks haven't won since 1971. Phoenix has never hoisted the Larry O'Brien trophy. They've been to the finals twice, defeated by Boston in 76, by the Chicago Bulls in 1993. Earlier reports, at least this morning, Giannis Antetokounmpo doubtful but progressing. So that's, you know, not great, but not horrible, I guess. I don't know. It's pretty vague.
Said the guy in the Chernobyl operating room.
Yeah, I mean.
Oh, it's not bad. It could be bad.
It says, despite good progress. And Budenholzer, he had a good day. He's making good progress. So, you know, maybe if you're the Bucks, you're obviously trying to get as much rest and have him be as healthy as absolutely possible before you'd want to throw him out there. Because as much as you are, and you absolutely are, trying to win this NBA Finals and win a championship, you've also got to have a little bit of, gosh, Kevin Durant in your mind from 2 years ago. But the only difference is you've got Giannis locked up, whereas...
Is anybody really locked up, though?
Yeah, I guess not, but his is as ironclad as it can be, not that, you know, opt-out possibility every single summer.
Right.
His is an actual deal. So, but anyhow, you got to have that a little bit in your mind, even though you're trying to win the with title. And so, I mean, without knowing his status, it's pretty hard to kind of break down how the games will go because he's such a force on both ends. Talking about the two-time reigning MVP that also was the Defensive Player of the Year. That's obviously a huge loss, but Milwaukee does seem equipped to handle it, at least in the short term. If it's game one, if it's maybe even game two, and they get him back for the last five games, three of which are at home, you know, maybe that's enough for them to kind of hang in there until they get Giannis back. It doesn't seem that way in a championship series, but we also don't really know what Phoenix is going to do because nobody's ever been there. It is so weird to have a series like that, where nobody has played in the finals outside of six games of Jay Crowder.
And I love it. I absolutely love it. It adds intrigue to me, for me, because it's not the same old teams that are always making the finals, the same old superstars always making the finals. I hope that this is the new direction the league is going, where we have more of more parity when we get into the playoffs. I know we say it all the time, the injuries have been a thing that have created this. It's a big reason why we got these finals. But I love the intrigue of it, the newness of it, of the new champion, and then just the matchups itself. It's incredibly intriguing for me, even without Giannis on the court.
So, you know, tonight, probably no Giannis. Obviously, that means you're going to have to see Drew Holiday, you're going to have to see Chris Middleton, you're going to have to see Brooke Lopez, you know, maybe some Bobby Portis, maybe some P.J. Tucker. You know, guys like that are going to have to kind of step to the forefront. And we've seen Chris Middleton do it at times with or without Giannis.
Right.
I mean, the guy outscored Atlanta 20-17 in game 3 down the stretch in the fourth quarter. to pull that game out of the fire. And then in the clincher in game six, had 16 straight in the third quarter, scored 32 overall. He's had three different quarters of over 20 points in this playoffs, which is right behind Kevin Durant to lead and Trae Young to lead the league in that stat throughout the playoff run. So, you know, but he's just a little bit inconsistent. Now, Drew Holiday had been pretty bad to start. He was better the last two games. So that gives you some confidence, I guess, if you're Milwaukee. But it feels like for Milwaukee, though, you're always thinking offense, where the points come from. I think this is going to have to be, if they're able to steal one of these first two, say Giannis doesn't play in either, it feels like it's going to have to be an ugly 90s style, you know, 91 to 89 type of game that they're just able to outslug Phoenix down the stretch.
That's the key for Milwaukee, sure. And that's what I thought, too, because we mentioned about the two teams not being here on this stage, a lot of players never being at this stage other than one. I bet you there's going to be some sloppy basketball early, and then, like you said, we're going to have that old school, dare I say, style of basketball.
Yeah, doesn't it feel like tonight is their chance because of the uneasiness of everybody going in? You know, you don't really feel like one of the two is going to be totally crisp, right? So
right.
It's going to be a little sluggish, a little sloppy. And in games like that, it feels you're going to have a chance to kind of steal it with whether or not it's a quarter of good play or whether or not it's three good minutes at the end. You'll have a chance to steal this one. And then game two, everybody will be a little bit more settled in, a little bit less anxious. Maybe the adrenaline isn't flowing quite as much. And then we'll see more of what we'll probably see throughout the series. So, you know, even though it's not the greatest news with Giannis, obviously not being able to, or doubtful, it does feel like tonight is the good chance for Milwaukee just because of the, you know, everybody being a little bit on edge.
And in my opinion, without Giannis, this is their only chance because of the nervousness in game one.
To steal one of the first two.
But yeah. If Phoenix comes out hot and they look comfortable in their home arena, oh boy, it's going to be a tough road to hoe for Milwaukee.
How do you stop if you're Milwaukee? How do you guard Phoenix?
I don't know. I've seen that on the list. I don't know how you guard. I think the big factor is DeAndre Ayton. Without Giannis on the court, he's a guy that I don't know if – how's Milwaukee going to stop him?
Well, you got Brook Lopez.
Yeah.
You know, you got Portis, who is a guy that is kind of an energy guy. You know, I'm not going to say P.J. Tucker can't guard anybody until he proves he can't.
Right.
Just because of how tough he is. But, yeah, that would definitely seem like a spot that Phoenix could exploit. But in a weird way.
Like pick and roll, you know, with
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But in a weird way, are you okay with that if you're Milwaukee because it's not Chris Paul and because it's not Devin Booker beating you?
I mean, does it matter who's beating you as long as you
can't beat him? I think the chances of those other two beating
because
you are better than Ayton.
The easy answer is, well, you shut down those two and you let everyone else beat you, right?
Yeah.
But that's easier said than done. So I guess the next answer would be, well, if you had to pick your poison, who do you shut down first? Do you shut down Chris Paul and then try to let Booker, the young kid on this stage, try to beat you? Or go the other way around. Let the old guy who's never been at this stage, who's been climbing this mountain forever, will the pressure get to him?
I think you got to.
I mean, what route do you go?
I think you have to try to take away Booker, and here's why. Paul is going to do what Paul is going to do, but maybe you can wear him down throughout a long seven-game series. And trying to make him do too much. Well, we're going to get to X factors in a little bit, and I think there's a guy that could change this, my theory here, because of how well he could play. But I think you've got to try to wear Chris Paul down. And you can do that on both sides of the ball. Drew Holiday did a pretty good job on Trae Young, considering the hot stretch that he was on. And obviously when Trae got hurt, it made that job a ton easier. But I do think Milwaukee is kind of equipped to guard Phoenix.
Okay.
Especially when Giannis is playing. Because you've got Holiday to guard Paul. You got P.J. Tucker you can stick on Devin Booker. Maybe switch Middleton there sometimes too. And then you've got Giannis to kind of pester DeAndre Ayton. I mean, I think that Milwaukee is equipped to guard him with Giannis. Now, without him, can Brook Lopez move enough when in the pick and roll to stay with Ayton? You know, will Ayton just dominate that with picks and pops and then just being too quick for him? We'll find out. But even then, you know, you can't just run pick and roll, alley-oop dunk every play.
Right.
And so if you get beat by DeAndre Ayton knocking down elbow jumpers versus open looks from Chris Paul and Devin Booker, I think you just kind of tip your cap, pat him on the butt, and say, great job, young fella. Better than those other two beating me, though.
It's true. Because you know that he's not going to be able to consistently do that for an entire series.
I mean, you don't.
You don't think so.
Think so. And if he does, he does.
But crazier things have happened, man. The finals. Crazier things have happened. You've seen guys just take over, literally take over. You've seen guys just go in a shell.
That's right.
And we will get a good sense of what that's going to be, who's going to be one or the other tonight, I think.
X factor-wise, the one way that the tiring Chris Paul theory doesn't work is if Cameron Payne continues to play the way that he has throughout a lot of this playoff run. You know, with 29 in one of the two games that Paul was out, you know, then he rolled an ankle. So we'll see, you know exactly how effective he can be. But that he's one of those X factors that could kind of take away the tiring of Chris Paul if he's able to be effective and Phoenix is able to play longer stretches without Chris Paul on the floor. Anybody else? I mean, that's kind of mine. I could see Mikal Bridges being kind of that guy. Cameron Johnson's been great off the bench for Phoenix in this run. Just making a few shots, you know, it seems like he's always kind of that 8 to 12 point guy, but makes some big ones when it's needed. On the Milwaukee side, man, it's just kind of been the starters and Bobby Portis, really, throughout the entire playoff run. You know, they're clearly missing DiVincenzo. Is a little bit of scoring that they're not able to get. So it's a little bit different to me for Milwaukee. Like, their X factors are going to be guys, they're guys, you know what I mean? I don't think they're going to have some kind of shocking surprise dude really step up and have an incredible game. I think it's just going to be, are their guys going to play well enough? Is Chris Middleton going to be consistent enough? Can Drew Holiday shoot the basketball? You know what I mean? They just don't feel like they're going to have a shocker guy.
No.
Step in there and play incredible.
Outside of Giannis, they're not a flashy team, but they can be consistent when those guys play good. So that is the X factor for me. What does Middleton do? How does he?
I think he's the key to the whole thing for the Bucks.
Yeah.
With or without Giannis. Because even with Giannis,
if he's not playing good, they struggle.
That's right. That's right. You know, Giannis can have great games, but if Chris Middleton isn't knocking down shots, and we talked about it, I guess it was game 3. It's a weird dynamic because there's no doubt that Giannis Antetokounmpo is the best player on the Bucks. He might be the best player in the league. But he is unable to be the closer because of his inability to shoot free throws. So the ball is always in Chris Middleton's hands down the stretch. And, man, he can get cooking and he can get smoking, flaming, burn your house down hot. But he can also struggle, and he's pretty inconsistent.
You know, we don't have to answer this now, and I'll probably save this question for when Giannis returns, but do you do a hack-a-shack on him? No matter what point in the game?
You know, rules
maybe are – maybe do it early.
The rules are different, you know, and if you get into the bonus early, if your Phoenix do too much fouling, maybe you do it.
You know he's going up for a shot. Foul.
Oh, absolutely.
And go, okay, let's see what you got.
Oh, if he's
first
going –
first quarter, let's see if you got the –
oh, yeah.
The shakes.
You do not let him dunk it.
Right.
I mean, you foul him. But it always seemed like that was a ploy to kind of change the rhythm of the game.
Yeah.
As opposed – you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And if Milwaukee's in a really, really good rhythm offensively and Phoenix creates a couple fouls, maybe they go to that. And, you know, any time under 2 minutes of a quarter, if he has the ball – especially in the second half, I guess, in tight games, you have to foul him.
Yeah.
You have to send him to the line.
Absolutely.
And make him prove he can make free throws. I don't think we're going to have to worry about that tonight. It doesn't look like with him doubtful.
No.
But That is always something that's got to be lingering in their head. All right, what about the match? Let's skip the Maria Taylor stuff. What about the match tonight?
Yeah, real quick, pick the series.
I also, the one thing we didn't talk about, I do think there is an advantage for Milwaukee, and that is the playoff hurt that they've experienced over the past 3 or 4 years. The climbing of the ladder, and you get knocked down, and having to get back up, try it again, get... Phoenix never did. These guys, a lot of them, it's their first playoff run.
Right.
The young guys especially. I think Giannis is going to come back. I think the Bucks are going to win in six.
Wow. Okay. Home court advantage is big for me. I think Phoenix takes the first two. Listen, Giannis, back or not, when he gets back, you know he's not going to be 100%. This is going to sound crazy. I cannot escape this number. I've been going this over and over and trying to talk myself out of it all weekend long. I'm going Phoenix in five.
Well, that's the home court, to win on their home court.
It is the home court. I think they take the first two, slip up, they split on the road, come home and take care of it.
Okay. The match.
Yes, the match.
I think it's kind of – this could be really, really good if Phil will let himself go there.
I think he will.
Do you? All the way? Let me ask you this. Do you think because he won the PGA, he can now say, screw it, I'm the PGA champion?
Yeah.
I'm just going to hammer Bryson DeChambeau over. How many Brooks Koepka references will there be?
Oh,
from Phil to Bryson.
Well, there's 18 holes. I think I'm in the ballpark of around 7.
Will he make him cry?
Oh no! What about cry laughing probably.
I can't wait to see how Bryson handles it because he doesn't get it.
No.
His reactions to different things, it's like he doesn't understand it. He doesn't get it. And with not only the Brooks stuff, then he split with his caddy this last weekend. There is mega ammo to fire out if you're Phil. And then on the other side with Brady, I mean, he already started kind of talking some trash to Rodgers about not going for it, kicking a field goal, you know, down the way the Packers did in the Bucks. This could be phenomenal. And then you throw in Charles Barkley, too.
Yeah.
Getting his needle out.
Yeah.
I think the pressure is off. There's no Tiger Phil friction. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I think they can have fun with this. If Phil will let himself be hilarious. And I really do think him winning that PGA helps free him up here.
Oh, yeah, it does. It does. I'm looking forward to it.
Because he'll just say, hey, listen, I won the PGA. I don't care.
This is good for the game, in my opinion.
It could be. I can't wait to see this course.
I hear it's
Montana.
Phenomenal.
It looks cool.
Is there truly a hole that's 777
yards?
Yes,
it's like an 8,000-yard golf course.
Wow.
It'll be fun. Everybody have a great day. Be back tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.